Hello and welcome back to the Third Period Podcast, where we take a look at the UK's ice hockey leagues. We're sponsored by Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium for all your ice hockey needs. Check them out. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Third Period Podcast. Tonight, you've got myself, Danny, and we have Ash. Ash, how are you?
Very good, thank you, Danny.
Fantastic. We've got Scott. Scott, how are you?
All good, pal.
Fantastic. And Ross over in the cave with the new Wi-Fi. How's it going?
Yes, very well, thank you. How about yourself?
Yes, coping, mate, coping. So, tonight we're rolling back the years with this guest. He played 15 seasons in Coventry over two stints. He had a blip on his CV, as we'll refer to it, with Cardiff Devils, and has since returned to playing with Basingstoke, now on to Milton Keynes. I've also got here that he is a doctor, but he wouldn't answer any questions about coronavirus, so I don't believe that for a moment. So we have with us Russ Cowley. Russ, how are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks very much for the intro, and thanks to all of you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problems at all, Russ. So I suppose the first question I've kind of got, and it's one that my sister always used to bug me about, because she was a big fan of yours when we first started going to hockey. Birth certificate says Edmonton, but it career says Swindon. Do you want to elaborate a bit more on that? Because I don't think many people know about that.
Yeah, no problem. So I guess if I keep this short and sweet, parents are both English. They moved to Canada in their 20s. I was born over there along with my brother and sister. We were there until I was 10. So born in Edmonton, but moved to Vancouver when I was one. The next 9 years were in Vancouver. Then we moved back for 4 years. I played in Solihull Hull at that point. That is actually during that 4 years, Tomo was actually one of my coaches. Would you believe? So we went back that far. And then we decided to go back to Canada again. So I went when I was 14, 15 for about two and a half years. And then we decided to come back for family reasons. And I went to Swindon at that point. And I was at Swindon for under 16s, under 19s. And then finally, when I was playing for, wasn't the Wildcats at the time, we were called the Swindon Phoenix. And yeah, it was my coach Larkin that spoke with Tomo at the time. And I started the first year on a two-way. And that's what brought me to Coventry. And my hometown in England is Worcester. So it's not far from Coventry, not far from Swindon or Solihull. So it was location-wise, geographical-wise, it worked out well.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So I suppose that leads me to my next kind of question. Obviously, grew up at early years in Canada. Where did the ice hockey start? Was it in Canada or was it when you came back over to the UK?
No, it was Canada. So my dad put me into skating lessons first for... I want to say it was best part of 2 years. So I started skating at five, but then I started hockey at seven. And I mean, for those that are listeners, and just to put it in perspective, I guess where I was in Vancouver, there was probably within a half an hour radius of where we live, 30 ice rinks. The biggest building had eight ice pads in it. There was probably three, maybe four, had six ice pads in it. You travel in any directions, you're going to have a minimum of two or three ice pads in a building, and they're always used. So that kind of puts it in perspective, kind of like football pitches that you'd expect in England, I guess.
Yeah. It's crazy. This is so worlds apart from what we're used to with one pad and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. And everyone's fighting for it. It's a shame, really, because I think it's one of the biggest barriers for the sport in the UK. It's a shame because... If you look at ice hockey as one of the, I think it's the most popular indoor sport, team sport, that is. It's a shame, really, that it doesn't, in terms of the barriers, obviously it's the cost that becomes a problem as well. So that's another barrier for families. But yeah, I think if there was more ice rinks in more cities, I think perhaps the traction would take a little bit more than what it does. And it's a shame because if you look at, you know, how the GB team's doing now and the standard of the Elite League as an example, like it's come on leaps and bounds. If you look at when the Elite League started, it's made a lot of strides. So it's a shame.
in your early days in Swindon Rush, you got to represent the GB under 18s, GB under 20s at 17 years old. And you look at the roster that went to those championships, it's all the guys we know. It's all the guys that I've grew up watching, and Jono Phillips, David Clark. At that age, when you're 17, did you think that you'd still be kicking about with these guys 20 years down the line?
That's a really good question. I think that's something I've probably never been asked, actually. I mean, I guess at the time, you know, for me, I know with my thought, I always wanted to play hockey. You know, since I was a young kid, all I wanted to do was play hockey. I even got my stick and my ball out with a dog we had, and I would stick handle with a dog if I didn't have anyone else to play with. You know, that's all I wanted to do. And at that time, I guess, you know, you look at under 18s, under 20s, then I guess your perception of being closer to perhaps playing professional becomes a lot stronger, but you still are unsure of I guess how far you can make it. And you know, I felt I was brought up in the right way and around the right people, whether it's, you know, my family or teammates, to at least give myself the best chance. I listened to the people I respected that I played with, and some of the older guys that were leaders and stuff like that, and I tried to follow their lead. And I felt like I gave it a good shot when I was young to at least give myself a good chance.
What's it like playing in those sort of tournaments? Are you obviously you young adults going into adulthood? Are you given a little bit of freedom, and do you get a chance to enjoy the tournament, or is it pretty much you have to do as you're told?
That's a good question as well. I mean, I'd say that naturally, like anybody gets, it's your, you know, you get, the more experience you have in a situation becomes a comfort zone, and therefore you probably play less within yourself as time goes on. And I felt certainly like that in my career. But you know, under 18s, you're there 2 years, then you move on to 20s. Yeah, it's the same group, but you know, if you take your, you know, if I take my first couple of GB trips when I was under 18s and the 20s, you're nervous. Sometimes you focus more on the mistake side of things, as you should be focusing on what you do well and bringing that well. So as time goes on, I think you learn to overcome and get your mind focused on the things you do well, and that you're picked for what you do consistently, and that going away, you don't need to change that. Because a lot of times I think it's easy for young people or young kids that are playing sport to start thinking, well, I've been picked to come here now, I've got to try and do something else that I normally do. But that's not the case. You're picked for what you always do consistently. So I think experience brings you that. And then over time, you just try and deliver what it is you've been delivering for the reasons that you were picked. But yeah, certainly when you're young, I mean, you are nervous, and nerves are good to a certain extent, but you don't want to get over nervous because it almost zaps your energy. You almost feel like when you started a game, you've actually played a game if you get too nervous. I'm sure you guys have probably been there in some way, shape or form with the sport.
Definitely. Not quite on your level, but definitely experienced the nerves. So 01-02, you're on a two-way with Swindon and Coventry Blaes. So it's second season in Coventry for the Blaes after moving from Solihull. We're in the BNL. That's probably a little bit of a step up from obviously what you were playing previously. What was your first thoughts of the BNL?
Really good standard. Quite a jump up. I just think not that it wasn't, you know, the professionalism in the league I was coming from, but obviously the BNL, you had more imports, a lot more people that were playing hockey full time as opposed to a lot of part time players in the league that I was playing with. But if you look at the players that were playing with Swindon, for example, you know, I was fortunate enough on that two-way season to be playing with Rob Davison and Merv Priest, all of who have played at the top level in the UK, so to speak, at their times. Great players, played in the national program, that kind of thing. So I guess I was learning from them as well, and that their standard was as good as what I'd go to in Coventry, but I suppose it's the depth. When you go and play in the BNL, it's the depth, and that makes a difference. And for me, it was about getting that experience to try and jump up. And I didn't see all that much ice, which is, you know, you pay your dues and you have to, you know, sort of again, you come and get that experience, whether you're on the ice or not. And then it comes a point, obviously, once you've had that experience to start with, that, yeah, you want some responsibility and more playing time to gain that experience, you know, on the ice. So I enjoyed it in Coventry. Some great players took me under their wing and showed good leadership and again, kind of directed me in the right direction.
So in your second season in the Blaze, 02-03, what season? Winning the league, playoffs, and runners up in the Finders Cup. What a feeling that must have been.
It was. If I'm right in thinking, bearing in mind I have the worst memory in the world, if I'm right in thinking, the year before we were bridesmaids and everything. Yeah, exactly. I thought so. And that was to Dundee. And I think it's obviously Dundee that we beat the following year. And they kind of were bridesmaids. And it was nice because sometimes you, and I don't know why, when I look back at my career as even a junior and then moving into professional or semi-pro, whatever you want to call it, then to pro, I was so fortunate because I was part of some good teams that won a fair amount of trophies, and you almost don't appreciate the winning when you've lost, and lost a lot perhaps even. And you know, from us the year before, we were bridesmaids to Dundee. That kind of gave us that extra push, that experience, and because it was so raw still being the season before, you, it almost gives you that drive and motivation to, I don't want to feel that ever again. And yeah, I think that brought us together, and we corrected things that we needed to correct from the year before. And I think that drove us over the finish line. And yeah, it makes it that much sweeter to win when you were so close the year before, perhaps. So that year was pretty special for me too.
And winning it in Dundee as well. You know, that's even sweeter, isn't it?
I do remember those times. If I remember, yeah, it was sold out. I mean, Dundee used to do really well back then with crowds. And obviously, of course, being as big a game as it was, yeah, it was incredible. And you can't beat the bus rides back after a win like that. It's you're on the bus with the boys and you're like a set of brothers. So you can't, you know, eight, nine hours on a bus after a win, just celebrating. You can't. Those are priceless times.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I remember it when we went up to Dundee. I was at school the next day. I don't know how I made it.
Well done you. Well done you.
So after that season, we step up to the Elite League. How did you find that compared to the BNL?
Again, a big jump, I guess. I go back to that word depth. That certainly made a difference. And of course, the teams that obviously were in the Elite League compared to the teams that were in the BNL. So you saw all the arena teams join as an example. And obviously for me being young, it was, you know, amazing to play in some of those buildings. Oftentimes they'd be sold out, and you, again, the atmosphere would be incredible. So it was, you know, on one hand nerve-wracking, but at the same time, like, just you know, felt special because, you know, for me it was the first time playing in some of those buildings, and I think it was nice to see them form a league that was looking to, you know, still really give British players the opportunity to play in key positions, because ultimately if you don't have British players playing enough, the national team suffers. And I think that's been evident maybe over some of the years, but if you look at when the Elite League era started and how the GB teams built off that, I think it's led to some good success.
Oh, definitely. We can't deny that. The way the league and the GB setup have progressed over, well, from the year, first year in the Elite League, sorry, until now, it's improved tenfold. But talking on the Elite League, we can't not discuss that the second year in the Grand Slam year. You're only one of a handful of players retained by Tomo as part of a big overhaul. The first season was under the belt. The club upped the game, bringing in some franchise guys. Your Neil Martins, Adam Calders, Dan Carlsons. Your despite being young, an older head in the locker room, to be fair, because you've been around to it now. What was your first impression of that group and the specialness of the group? Did you ever feel that team would go to the heights it got to?
I couldn't tell you where the point came in the season, but it was before Christmas, and I felt like we had a confidence about us that wasn't on the arrogant side, but the kind of confidence where, as a group, we'd go into games and we would stick to what we know we did well. But I mean, we were talented as well. The thing is, we had good depth, three good lines. And I guess I'd like to ask you, because I can't quite remember, how many games did we lose that season?
I'll come back on that one. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure.
Ash, I'm putting you on the spot now. Sorry about that. It wasn't many. And even in the games that in some of the semifinals, finals, as much as the room would be geared up and ready to go, it was still that confidence where we just believed in what we were, you know, the sum of, you know, of every part, you know, for that team that year was the difference maker. And we had a bit of everything. And I think that's the thing. I mean, we've seen it many times in sport where it's about the sum of the parts that makes the whole what it is. And that year, like I said, we had an unbelievable group. We all got on. The chemistry was unreal. And we had a bit of everything on the ice. And I think that was a difference maker for us.
Just been messaging in the background saying that season there was 5 regular losses and 6 overtime losses.
There you go.
That answers its own question, doesn't it?
I was, yeah. For some reason, in my head, I had 6. I was one off. So it was... You said the OT, and I definitely wasn't sure on that, but I thought in my head it was 6 losses, but you say 5, so I was one off, but I knew it wasn't many, and that's, you know, incredible when you think about it. You know, the consistency in a team sport is key, and I think that kind of indicates really how consistent we were, and if you had one line that wasn't going on a particular night, the other two were, and same with the defense, you know, pairings, you know, people have off nights, lines have off nights. But most games we'd have definitely 2 lines going and winning us games. And then Lamer that year as well. Jody was unreal, especially in some of the finals that we played, in particular the one against Nottingham for the playoffs. It was, you know, he's a winner, as they say. That's his personality. So yeah, it was special. One of the best moments definitely in my career.
You just mentioned some of the special moments, and I know the 4 lads between us, we've all sat down, we've all got our favourite part of that season, whether it be the Challenge Cup in Cardiff, beating London 5-1 at home and getting the trophy for the league, or the playoff final, like you mentioned. For you personally, as a player, what was the best part of the season for you that year?
I think I'd probably have to say the playoffs, because obviously, to win the treble is something. I mean, a lot of players in their career don't even win a trophy, let alone a treble. So a treble is hard to come by. And you know, again, I go back to me being spoiled in my career, if you like, for lack of a better term. But, you know, I was young at that point, and to get it that early or with that group, yeah, it's a priceless moment, something you can't take away. So I'd have to say the playoffs, because, like I said, that was the clincher for the treble. So something that, you know, at that point in time, do I ever think that's going to happen again? Probably not, and it didn't. But again, some players don't win another trophy, or a trophy. So yeah, definitely the playoffs for me.
Kind of closing off that Grand Slam campaign, we can't not discuss the night in Coventry against London in the playoffs. And Eric Kearns, taking a dislike to the referee. Well, Andre initially, then the referee, then you.
I know where you're going with this.
I can imagine your face is a bit sore for a couple of days after that.
So I'll let you know, yeah, you know what the scoop is. So every season from that point on, there would be a new player that we have on the team on a road trip that would bring their phone down the bus to wherever I was, and say, Russ, talk me through this. So I had to relive that moment every single season at least once, at least. Second point on that is my whole ear went black and he didn't even wind up that hard. So yeah, my whole ear went black. My balance went for about 15 minutes because obviously, as most people probably know, your balance is through your ear. And yeah, my balance went. But then it obviously soon adjusted and we went on to win the game. So that was nice. But yeah, it wasn't very nice to be on the end of that. What was I thinking at the time? I mean, I was holding on to Jason Robinson, who I later played with but didn't know at the time. Me and him had a good laugh when we played together about that. And I said to him, because he's a tough guy himself. And, you know, I'd have no business even trying to consider taking on someone like him. And I laughed with him that, like, when I grabbed him, my thought was, oh, Jesus, why have I got you? but that was, yeah, it was crazy times. I mean, been part of a few, whether you want to call that a bench clearance, there's been worse cases, I guess. But, you know, it's all part of the game. And you look back and you laugh on those moments, definitely. Many of my teammates have laughed on that moment, let's put it that way.
There was one time, I'm sure it's Grand Slam year, I could be slightly off here, that we were down in London and it's got to be Grand Slam year because you had Andre, Wade, Cornish, Robinson, the tough guys of the league, the bona fide tough guys. Two of them have squared off centre ice. Am I right in thinking camera pans left and there's yourself and Matt Thomas, two very young Brits at the time, rolling around the ice having a bit of a to and fro? Why are you not watching the main event?
Yeah, we had a scrap. One of my very, very few, very few that I've had. Me and Tomo didn't know each other at the time, and then we later played together with GB. Someone I speak to here and again still now. One of the probably best guys I've ever met. We used to bicker about who won what. And obviously he's bigger than me. He probably has about 4 inches in height at least, and probably a good 25, 30 pounds. But we have a good laugh about that. And I still speak to him. So you look back on those times and I'm trying to think how it happened now. We just ended up holding on to each other because of I think it was a fight between Cornish and either Payet or Wade. And I can't remember which one. Yeah, exactly. Go figure, right? Cornish was either fighting Bielak or Payet. And I think it was Payet. And then me and him grabbed each other. And Tomo said to me, you want to go? And I was like, okay, then why not? Why not? Have a little bit of fun here. I don't have many. So what's the worst that can happen, right? You get tooth knocked out, bit of blood, black eye. Why not?
Fantastic. That's that's an unusual story to have from you, Russ.
exactly. Right.
It's crazy. Yeah, why not? Just go for it. What's the worst that will happen?
Hey, I was young and stupid at that time. As you get older, you become more wise.
Oh, crazy. So obviously, we've touched upon Grand Slam and everything's all rosy in the garden, as the saying goes. And then that following year, we have a big overhaul again, obviously not because Tomo wanted to, but because obviously the big guns get scouted from other leagues. So 2005-2006 was a bit of a kind of shock factor for fans, you know, finishing fourth in the league, no trophies. How did it feel in the dressing room in comparison to the year before?
Yeah, big change. And again, I guess, we had actually a really good group that year, but I just think that the balance, if you will, between what we had the year before for the on-ice, if you want to call it the on-ice product, just wasn't the same. And that, again, I think showed in where we finished. So there was that, obviously. And then I think on a personal level, I mean, again, I go back to being spoiled the year before with the treble. I think it's an eye-opener for me, or it was, that you know, trophies aren't going to come thick and fast. They just aren't. And that you realize luck isn't the right word from the year before, but I guess how rare those moments are. And so from a growth perspective as a person within the sport, it helped me to understand a lot more and the success versus the unsuccess. But yeah, I just think we had a good, really good group of guys, but at the same time, the on-ice product, the balance between us as a team just wasn't near what it was the year before.
Yeah, definitely showed, obviously, with, like you say, the results and where we finished. But do you think that had a contribution into the kind of the next season, which is what we're going to touch upon here? I know we've had a joke in the little intro. We call it the blot of your career, moving to Cardiff in 06-07. did that season where we kind of took a step back in terms of where we were from the Grand Slam year, did that have an effect in that decision, or was it just this is something new, let's try it?
No, I think I remember speaking with Tomo in the summer, and I said that I just wanted some more opportunity. You know, at the time I was playing the third line role and nothing else, and I said to him, you know, I want to be able to contribute in other areas, and I want to be given that opportunity. And he was honest with me, which is what I wanted. And he said he couldn't guarantee it. So I've been speaking with a couple other teams as well. And I like the sound of Cardiff, from what opportunities might be to, you know, my best pal living with him and his brother, which is obviously Mark and Lee Richardson. My best mate's obviously Lee Richardson. So it was good to be down there with two familiar faces. And yeah, I guess for me too, you know, joining the Coventry at a young age, I think sometimes as well, you need to, I guess essentially sometimes my intention at the time wasn't to necessarily move away and come back. It was, you know, do I need to look somewhere else and experience somewhere else to see what it's like being somewhere else, because of obviously being used to Coventry. I liked it at Coventry. I didn't want to leave, but it was the case of, you know, I have to think about my career here and what is the best opportunity for me. And like I said, Tomo was honest, and I felt that going to Cardiff was the best opportunity. And I look back now, and I still like the decision I made. Unfortunately for us in Cardiff, we didn't have the rink until Christmas, which is a problem because we didn't have a lot of practice time at all. And Playing at this level, you just can't have that. I ended up getting injured, which is actually, for me, as much as I've had injuries, I've never had a muscular injury, if that makes sense. It's always been impact from the physical side of the game that I've always ever missed. I've never, ever pulled a muscle, if you like. The only time I think in Coventry I ever missed a friendly game was because of my groin. But that was in the last 2-3 years of my career. But certainly for the first 10 to 14 years of my career, never ever pulled a muscle. And I ended up having a problem with my abdominal muscle, because if you think you're not skating, you can't replicate it. I mean, we went some weeks without touching the ice between games, and you just can't do that. So I ended up getting a problem. I was doing well up until that point. You know, I was playing on one of the top lines with Mark Smith, playing power play, penalty kill, doing well. And then unfortunately from that point, when I came back, it just wasn't the same. And I struggled the rest of the year, but I loved Cardiff. We had an unbelievable group. The city was good. I don't have anything bad to say, if that makes sense. And we won the Mickey Mouse Cup that year. Which was the knockout cup. Do you guys remember the knockout cup?
Yeah, I forgot it existed.
Yeah, exactly right. It was that important. It was obviously the, out of the four trophies, it was the least important, but a trophy is a trophy. And we went to the finals of the playoffs that year. Let's not forget that. We actually beat Coventry in the semis. Mm. Sorry to say that, boys. But yeah, and I felt like we had a good opportunity to win the playoffs, but unfortunately we didn't. So, But yeah, we had a good group, enjoyed it.
It was a good squad they had that year. But I think, again, it was like you alluded to earlier, maybe in a few seasons with the Blaze, they just maybe didn't have the balance, or the product just didn't meet the demands, or however you want to word it. But the thing that jumps out for us that year is, obviously, you go and sign for the Devils, your first game back at the Sky Dome. Obviously, the fans love to see you. You've been a bit loyal. And then you go and score two goals. I don't think that went down well. What was it like for you being on the receiving end of the fans that game?
I've got to be honest. I couldn't say that when I came back, the fans were always still really good to me. I felt like they might have given me nothing ever seemed personal. Like, it always seemed friendly jibes. Yes, they gave me jibes, but friendly ones. And I really respected that. And I knew the people that were giving it to me, if that makes sense, in more of a personal way too. So for me, it was always funny, and I loved it. Scoring against Coventry, like, okay, it's, you know, for me, I'm helping my team, but again, even scoring, I don't think I really celebrated, because I still had those strong feelings for Coventry, and that was never, ever going to go away.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether I came back or not, I don't think that would have ever gone. But from a professionalism side, it was about us winning, and I played for Cardiff at the time. And I guess that's the only way I can put it.
Yeah, I do remember you scoring the first one. I think you scored, you turned around and then realized, no, and then just skated off back to the bench.
I might have put my hands up, but I certainly wasn't going to do the windmill down the ice or throw my glove up in the air and shoot it or any ridiculous celebration. No, definitely not.
At least it showed you had respect for the club, not like other players in recent
sure.
years.
Sure, sure.
We won't say names, but we'll just say 8-8, and that's about it. the other game that you had when you came back to the Sky Dome, and I've got to touch upon it, and I'm sorry. Your good friend had recently rejoined the Blaze at this point in Michael Tasker.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this as well.
In the corner.
Yeah.
Tasker just comes out of nowhere and decides to steamroll you. What happened, and do you remember it?
Yes, I do. So... and I think I may have explained this on a different podcast, but it possibly didn't. So that game, I had legitimate flu and probably shouldn't have played, but I did. So I was a little bit out to lunch. But in that incident, if you look at the replay of where the referee goes, I was blindsided. So it didn't matter who it was that was coming at me from that side. I did not see whoever it would have been. I wouldn't have seen them until it was too late. So the referee was in a poor position that I actually couldn't see to at least brace myself, move out of the way. And Task was really apologetic after. It was a good hit. Wasn't an unfair hit. Wasn't a bad hit. I had no bad feelings towards him. Task was one of the guys that I might have called him an effing prick after. But, you know, he was one of the guys that was always good to me when I came to Coventry, took me on his wing. So I did give him shit for a little while for doing that to me. But at the same time, like I said, you know, there's times where we do have our head down and we shouldn't. But in that particular play, my peripherals would be able to see anybody coming. And because the referee was where he was, I didn't see him until it was too late.
Yeah.
So, I got, next thing I know, I remember thinking, uh-oh. And before I'd even finished the uh-oh, I'm looking at the ceiling. I'm looking at the ceiling line on my back, and it's one of those. We've all had them. I've had a few more where I've been hit in a similar fashion, maybe not quite the same, but they suck as a player. You kind of feel, and especially for me being back at Coventry too, it's kind of, you know, my club and the players that I know, I guess it's more, you know, you feel a little bit of shame, but at the same time, it's part of the game. And like I said, he didn't hit me unfairly. No. Yeah, he didn't need to line me up, but it wasn't a dirty hit.
No. So. Yeah. I can relate to the looking up at the rafters on your back. I've been it once and been concussed, and I just remember waking up with paramedics around me. I was like, oh, hello.
Oh, so you were actually out.
I was out. I'd been hit mid-ice, just crossed the blue line, mid-ice hit. So I don't know what happened myself, but others have told me I somersaulted, landed on the top of my neck, base of my skull, and I was out straight away.
Jeez. See, yeah. I've never blacked out like that. My vision's gone black, but I recall everything, like even my vision going black, but I've never blacked out as in been out for a period of time. So you're saying you're out for quite a while, I guess.
Yeah, it was a training session as well, so it was one of my teammates.
Oh, no way.
In the game. That's the funny part about that.
Jesus.
Yeah, so not good, that one. I just remember I remember getting the puck crossing the blue and that's it, and then waking up and I've got two paramedics over me, and I'd literally bought new body pads and new shorts maybe 2 weeks before from Puck Stop, and they cut the body pads off me, and I was
livid,
because they're not livid.
Yeah, but they are not cheap. Absolutely not cheap.
Crazy. But you said obviously that year you had the playoff final with the Devils as well. Just going back to your career, Russ, because you're more important than me, let's be honest.
Hey, we can all have good banter here. We can all have good chat.
The following year, you moved back to the Blaze, obviously. Good for us as fans. And we go on to obviously win the league that year. Did that make up for losing the playoff final with the Devils?
Yeah, definitely. Again, it was another taste for me to understand and experience what it feels like to lose. And like I said, the more you feel like that, the more you get that experience, it gives you that motivation to understand. And again, when you get into that position of a final, it gives you that it becomes more of a comfort zone. So we went back, just going back to what you guys were asking me when I was young and being nervous in certain positions, and you always are. And certainly in that position, I would have been nervous, but much, much less so and more focused on, okay, I know what it's like to lose. I was here last year in this position and we lost, and this is how it felt. And you use that momentum and feeling to motivate you to understand what you need to do. So yeah, it was, you know, to come back to Coventry was good for me. I did my master's that year in Coventry. Again, we had a good group of players. And I think, I'm trying to think if some of the players that had also gone elsewhere maybe came back that year. I'm trying to think. I know Neil Martin had stuck around because he hadn't gone to Aalborg yet, but I think he might have brought Barry Moore in that year. Was that the first year Barry Moore came?
I think the year before.
That's right, but he stayed on the second year as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think we had some good chemistry that year, again, as a team. And yeah, we got over the finish line, like you say, in the finals.
Yeah, obviously stayed with the Blaze then and up until, should we use the air commas, retirement, winning another league title and some other cups along the way. But the biggest impact, obviously, for that era of the Blaze was the coach on the bench, obviously Paul Thompson. What was it like having him around, and what was it like when that announcement's made that he's going to go and look at his own new ventures?
Yeah, I mean, it was, as I say, I mean, me knowing Tom, I went back to when I was a junior as well. He's obviously a coach who brought me in. There's a lot that he taught me, especially on the defensive side of the game. I think that became a niche for me as I got older. You know, the defensive responsibility, and like offense is an art, so is defense, believe it or not, because you need to be able to anticipate what other people are going to do. And that became obviously a role for me as time went on, because I was completely the way natured when I first came to Coventry, and as a junior, I was completely offense orientated. I wasn't aware of the defensive side of the game. And I think, unfortunately, the junior level of the game in the UK is lacking, where the good players, if you like, will be able to do what they want in the ice and get away with it because of the lack of consistency and depth that exists. And of course, when you see some players now that make that jump, again, I see the same thing as perhaps what I had, that you don't have to understand what your responsibility is defensively, because you can just go and cheat all over the ice and do whatever you want, if that makes sense. So yeah, it was, I'm trying to go back to your question here. What was the main question? I've drifted.
So what was Tom, like the impact of Tom?
It was sad, because if you look at it, he was, you know, he was the figurehead of the club. You know, he's part of Solly Hall. Then they moved over. I'd known him a long time. And yeah, it was, and then for me personally, I remember thinking, like, I go back to that comfort zone, and sometimes as players, you like it, sometimes you don't, but even if you don't like it, it's nice to have or step out of that comfort zone, because again, it's given you that experience to be something different, to add strings to your bow in some way, shape or form. So it certainly was definitely weird, sad to see him go, but at the same time, whether he needed something new personally, and it's the same for him, right? Like, Coventry's a comfort zone. Did he need a different challenge, something to gain more experience, something to gain on a personal level, absolutely. And I think, again, if I look at it myself personally, it was going to bring a different element of a comfort zone and a different coach with different perhaps ways of strategies, X's and O's, their personality, that type of thing. So it was certainly a change, but I guess it kind of was good for Tomo because he needed to experience the things that he did.
So post Tomo, we have the 13-14 season, and Matty Soderstrom comes in. It's a weird year for everyone, I think, for the players and for the fans, because we've got Ryan Ginand, who scores 43 goals, 42 assists, but then gets a lot of penalty minutes, doesn't really seem to gel into a Blaze player, even though he scored all those points.
Yes.
We bring back Jadice, who was previously there and then comes back, and it seems kind of like an up and down year. This didn't seem pieces to the puzzle. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, it is. And I go back to, I go back to what I was saying about that chemistry, and you don't have to have the best player in the team to win. That year, if I remember rightly, G did win, Ginan won the scoring title.
He did, yeah.
He did, and phenomenal player. I got on well with G, but at the same time, sometimes you look at players that have been successful individually and look at how much they've won as a team trophy-wise. And sometimes that's the way of life in sport. You'll see sometimes the most successful players in the world that won't, in their respective positions and wherever they are in the world, that not always is it going to bring team success. And ultimately, we play this game for team success. So there are oftentimes you need players that are willing to step out of their comfort zone to perhaps play a style of game or be something as a player that's contributing that they're not used to. And if you have a team of one dimensions that want to do what they're always used to and aren't prepared to bring a role that they're maybe not used to, that's going to be for the betterment of the team, then that's going to reflect in what you have at the end of the season, which is effectively nothing. And if you look at the teams that we've had and when we won trophies, you will see, as I say, players that buy into a particular role that they're going to help the season, the team over the season, deliver a trophy. And oftentimes that will happen. That's what has happened, or what I've certainly experienced in my career.
Yeah, I think Blaze fans aren't daft. We're a wily old bunch at times.
Absolutely.
We see what's going on. One player that was there that year that was Kevin Harvey.
Yeah.
Now, he seemed to play with an edge and he enjoyed himself playing, and he left halfway through the season. Now, to the fans, he seemed to buy in, but then it was kind of a, right, he's gone. What was he like as a player? For you, sorry.
Yeah, you know what? Harv was, as a teammate, he was the type of player that delivered everything that actually was probably a premium for teams, because he was a very good hockey player, like a very good hockey player. And when he wanted to play, he could play. He could fight. He wasn't scared to fight. He wasn't scared to fight guys bigger than him. I mean, you saw him in some fights, he had a smile on his face. he didn't mind getting punched in the face, that's for sure. But at the same time, I guess he probably needed that, the level of control. There are some players that need, certain control to keep them in line with the system's not the right word. But the team ethos, it needed that control. And there are some players I've played with in my career that fit that same mold, where if they are able to be controlled to play within a certain space, then the team will have success and so will that player. But then, unfortunately, if they're in a position where they go out of that zone, it does start to hurt the team. But at the same time, like I said, he's you know, great hockey player. And it's hard to find people that are able to actually bring everything that he can bring to a team. Very hard.
Yeah. Well, obviously, we could only see what was going on the ice. And I think during that, it was a transition period for the fans. So I think they could latch on to what they could at the time. So obviously, it doesn't really work out for Matty. We bring Matt Lafabe in, and then we go into the 14-15 season.
Yeah,
and Brian Stewart comes in. We see some good signs, and then Chuck replaces Mark.
Yeah.
Now, it's been widely said about the embrace the suck culture that Chuck brought in.
Yeah.
What was it like as a player?
If it's okay, I'll go back to just quickly on Matty. It was a shame for me because I knew him so well personally. He's one of the guys that I've played with in my career that if you could take a guy to war, you'd take him with you. Because he'd be one of the first to put himself in front of a bullet for any of his teammates. That's the type of guy he was. That's the type of personality he was. Someone that you would class as probably one of the better teammates you ever played with. So it was sad for me to see him go. Then obviously Lafave came in. I got on well with him, and I'd obviously been a teammate of his. I've been a line mate of his. And obviously it was sad to see him go too, same thing. But, you know, essentially he built that team that Chuck came in to take over. Chuck came in with, at first, I want to say when Chuck came in, we lost the first maybe 7 games on the trot. 8. So say that again.
Yeah, I think we did. And we when we were losing games, it was the odd goal that we were losing them by.
Yes. So when he came in, and at the time, from a player perspective, it was, you know, he came in and he put us through the war, like off the ice. So there was, you know, being honest, there was a little bit of apprehension of, put it in player perspective, we got, you know, as just before Chuck came in, you know, from a player perspective, it sucked. Like, we've been losing. We were either bottom or Edinburgh were the only team holding the league up, and we were next. And it sucked. Like, it just wasn't, you know, as much as you could have a fun group, which I'll tell you, we did. We had, again, I go back to chemistry, and I'll come back onto that perhaps why we went on to win it, as well as obviously Chuck coming in. But we had an unreal group. Everyone got on. We all hung out together. But even when you have that, if you're not successful on the ice, there comes that element where, like, it's just tiresome coming to the rink sometimes because, you know, that, you know, losing can sometimes almost breed, and it leads to an aura around the room. And during games, it's like, you know, I guess I want to put this in the right way, but you don't go into games wanting to lose, but at the same time, you don't have it in your head that, like, come on guys, we're gonna win this, even though that's what we're all playing for. And then Chuck came in, and like I said, it was there was apprehension. He put a lot of, you know, a lot of stress on us, and really worked us hard in such a way mid-season that you think, well, we need to maintain fitness. But it's kind of almost like it was tough. So, you know, I remember at the time, I guess I'd been at Coventry a long time, and, you know, I'd spoke to some of the older guys, which obviously I was at the time too. I think I was assistant captain, and I remember speaking to guys saying, you know, let's see here where we are in maybe, a, you know, 3-4 weeks time. And obviously Chuck had individual meetings of what he expected of people. And it just came a point when we started winning that things clicked. And looking back now, Chuck had a plan from day one. The funniest thing was walking into Edinburgh when his first game was away in Edinburgh. And he walked into their dressing room, which is a dump, absolute dump. And he's like, where's the coach's office? Whole room burst out laughing. Because there wasn't a coach's office, didn't exist. You're not going to get one. Just go stand in the hallway. But he had a plan. And he just wanted everyone to grab an oar and row the boat in the same direction. And that year we weren't the most talented team, but again, I go back to chemistry and the right personalities. Everybody got on and everybody knew what their role was. And if you got everyone rowing the boat in the same direction, you're going to get there quicker and you're going to get there successfully. And that's, you know, he came in and put his foot down on the gas hard, or the accelerator hard, whichever you want to call it. And then when everyone bought in, he started to relax that a little. And when I say relax it in a good way, I don't mean relax it as in do what you want, but I'm going to taper off here because you guys are buying in, you're doing what I want, you're playing the game the right way. And he started with defense first. The first 3 weeks in practice, it wasn't the funnest because all we did was work on defense. And that was our problem that year. We could have scored 5 goals. We would have given up 6. We could have, it didn't happen, I don't think, but we could have scored 10 and we would have given up 12. So the problem with us, and as I say, I know it's the biggest cliche, is defense wins championships, but he built on the defense. And once we got that in order, it was then, right, let's move up the ice. We'll start working on neutral zone, offensive zone. And he wanted us to have fun in the offensive zone. So again, guys, we started to enjoy being at the rink. And it was just, it just became fun. And I can't put it into words how to go from second bottom in the league to a team that everybody fears. Nobody wanted us in playoffs. And I can understand why. Because we found our niche, we found our stride, we found our game. And we had that belief then, it didn't matter who we were going to get, we had that belief that if we bring our A game, we can win this. And it just, we just kept going.
Yeah, I mean, as fans, I don't think we appreciated Chuck in the sense that Ed and Stu had him on a podcast and they were talking about that season. And just the little things he come out. He had a game plan to beat Cardiff. When we played Sheffield in the playoffs, he wouldn't put O'Mara and Gertsen out against their top line when they were in the offensive zone. It's just those little things that ended up winning us it. But then also the players buying in. If you didn't want to buy in, you weren't going to play.
Huge difference. And he, like you hit the nail on the head from a coach's perspective. Chuck is one of the best I've played for from an X's and O's point. And he had so many different tactics, systems, plays in his head for any scenario. And you could never, ever put him for lack of preparation because he's one of the most prepared I've played for. And I enjoyed playing for him. If you worked hard, you'd play. And that's all he wanted. If you worked hard, you'd play. And of course, don't get me wrong, he wanted you to play within his systems. But at the same time, like if you're, you know, and I think that's fair, that if you're loyal to playing the right way, which essentially is how everyone should play because you're playing for your teammates. If you play to the system the right way and you work hard, everything should fall into place. And that's all he wanted. And that's where everyone ended up buying in. You know, he gave us that belief. He put the structures in place and asked us all to work hard. And if we did that, then we'd have success. And at the same time too, he thought, you know, if we're the fittest team on the ice and games are tight in the third period, towards the end of the third period, we'd have that extra gear. And if you look at some of the games that happened in the later part of the season, that took us over the finish line.
Well, you have to give yourself some credit for taking us over the finish line that year, because when that goal goes in against Belfast, no one in the rink sees it but you.
Yeah, I think it was my position. It was absolutely my position. I remember I remember seeing it, like, and it was like not far from the middle of the net. I'm trying to think, was it me and Ash that were involved on the play with? It was DaCosta, yeah. And yeah. I was just in the most perfect position. The goalie wasn't anywhere near for his stick to push the net, if you like, because that has happened. And the net just pounced out backwards. And I remember screaming the ref, it's gone in, it's gone in. And I'm not sure if that was the first year we had, or just for the finals, we had goal line technology. Yeah, see, yeah, you're nodding at me there, guys. I can see that. So it was. And let's be honest, like, if we didn't have that year, we might not have won. And it goes to show, like, and I say this probably in my position, obviously now teaching in university with sport business, that you look at any of the sports where those decisions aren't made the right way, the implications for even the monetary value from sponsors, you name it, of getting a decision like that wrong. And players, whether they're on bonuses, sponsors for the money they're contributing for wins, sponsorship value of the package that might be the next year because you're a successful team winning trophies, you name it. And it's so important. And like I say, if we didn't have that goal in technology, we might've lost. And I remember seeing it and I was just yelling at the ref and I was seething. Like, I think I might've been Darnell and I think he was shouting back at me, I'll take a look at it. And then they did, thank God. Thank God.
So obviously you play a few more years in the Blaze and you end up getting your jersey retired alongside some of the greats that we've had here, Steve Charger and Adam Calder and Dan Carlson. I just want to briefly touch on Adam Calder. You probably knew him best than all of us and throughout your hockey career. What a special bloke.
He was. As a guy, as a teammate, it puts it in perspective when you see someone at his young age, which it was, lose a battle to cancer, and it puts things in perspective. You know, he was a good family man, a father, and it's sad. As a teammate, to talk to him about as a teammate, if you look at the success we've had at Coventry, we have a lot to owe. Some of the trophies I've won, I have a lot to owe to him. He had a very specific style of play, which he didn't move his feet fast, but he was still quick. And let's be honest, he was a smart hockey player. If he knew when he had to work hard and when he didn't, he worked smart. And if there was ever anybody that you had faith in for getting you back in a game, scoring a goal at a crucial moment, it was him. And my biggest memory of him, of being able to bring what he brings and do what he does, was Edinburgh away. And you guys will remember, sure. Correct me if I'm wrong, was that 2012? You guys will have to look now.
Yeah.
Sorry, I should know this.
09-10.
Yeah.
Was it 09? Was it that far back?
I've got it, Med.
09-10. Yeah, the last time in the league, I believe.
09-10.
How old do I feel?
We're all getting older.
Oh my God, catches up with you, doesn't it? I remember just being in Edinburgh and we were playing Belfast the next night for the league. If we lost, in fact, I think is even if we got 1 point, we were still playing for the league the next night. I think we just needed to take it to overtime to win it, but it would have come down to that one game. And who wants to go back on the last game of the season to play for the league against Belfast? Great finish it would have been to the season for both sets of fans, but ultimately at the same time, like, as a player, you know, with Coventry at the time, you can finish it on the Saturday night in Edinburgh. You want to get it done. So we were obviously losing. And up pops called in the last minute or two to tie the game. We're in OT, up pops called again. And that was, if I could explain him as a player and what his impact was and could be, that was in a nutshell for 2 minutes. He did what he does best. And if without him, we might not have won the league that year. Let's be honest. So amazing.
Very much doubt we would have. But I do want to talk to you about your jersey retirement.
Okay.
How did you learn of the retirement and what was your thoughts going through your head?
I was really overwhelmed. I think it was PZ, who again was a long-term teammate and friend of mine. Played with him back in Solihull as well. So I'd known PZ a long time. He was obviously working for the team at the time and called me up and said we'd like to retire your jersey. So I was speechless to start with, honored just to be up in the stands with the names that are up there. And yeah, I was speechless, and it was a huge honor for me to have that. I think it was nice because it gave me a chance to maybe sometimes look back, because as much as you do look back at your past, it gave me more focus to look back at what I guess I'd been to the club, but at the same time, it gave me a chance to remember what the club meant to me. And I include the fans in that, my teammates, ownership, friends I've made along the way. And it just gave me just such good memories. With Rob, for example, even looking back at things, we started the charity, which raised, I think it was about £35,000-£40,000 for charity, everything. And you look at those things and you start to really think about, like I say, how it's developed me as a person, what it's given me individually, and to be up in the rafters was a really special moment and one of the best for me. From an individual perspective, it's one of the best moments of my life. And it was great to celebrate it with a lot of the people who were there at the beginning of my career at Coventry, of course, my family. For me, without my parents driving me at 1-2 in the morning all over the country for a long period of time, I wouldn't have been able to be where I am. So it was amazing. Special night.
Yeah, and truly deserved, obviously, the career you had with us.
Thank you.
Throughout your career, it's definitely deserved. And what a way to finish off your pro career, going to Belfast with GB, winning the gold medal.
Oh, was there ever a lot of emotion? It was insane because I still was apprehensive and I was kind of like, do I need to hang them up here? And it wasn't that I felt my body wasn't capable, but we had a child at the time, and I was starting to think that, do I need to start looking at obviously a career outside of hockey? And I thought to myself, that from a GB perspective, we'd come close to gold the two seasons before. And again, I go back to that experience of losing. And I think that's what drove us as a team. Pretty much the same team the last 3 years, albeit maybe a change of about three guys, maybe four tops. But yeah, we went into Belfast. We knew what we were capable of, as we did the two seasons before, or two championships before, I should say. And realistically, we if you want to put it in the right way, we lost it ourselves. It was our own doing. And as I say, we should have done it previously. But if you look at the path that has led GB down now, it makes you think what would have happened, with the GB team recently getting to Pool A. If we had won the gold the year before, it would have been in a different grouping the year after. You almost think are you a believer of fate? And if so, you would have seen that the right way. So yeah, it was amazing for me to be a part of some of the GB teams I've played on, and my friends from those GB teams it's undescribable. Like the team chemistry we've had with GB is nothing like I've ever experienced in such a way with such a short tournament. And to go away with that group, and for me personally to finish with that group, some of the players who I'd known for many years, and to go out on a gold, you couldn't ask for a better way to go out. It was, yeah, for me, it was amazing. And for me, again, it was the first gold I'd ever won at any level. So it was for me, I know it was my last chance. And I'm kind of lost for words on that, because sometimes I sit here and I think, and it does make you a little bit emotional to just think back. And, I'd love it. I'd love to live that moment over time and time again, but yeah, it's something that I'll cherish forever.
I think as a player, you enjoyed it, but as fans, we did, because I know we're not playing, but we went through the heartache as well, and we were like literally pushing for it to happen.
Of course.
And then for actually to it happen, it was great to see. So we appreciate that.
No, and I appreciate you saying that, because I think there was a, you know, for the hockey fans of our nation, it was, you know, for us again as players, it was, we delivered heartache, you know, for 2 years on the trot. I certainly think, you know, we were a better team than Ukraine the year before. And for some reason, we just didn't get it done. Then we obviously, probably the one even before that, which was in Eindhoven, you know, all we needed to do with was tie with Lithuania. It was, it's indescribable. And I got to say that the feeling after that game, I was rooming with Weaver that year. And I think I roomed with him the year after too. Me and him got on really well. Great friend. And we literally went back to our hotel room and lay on the beds. Didn't even speak a word. Bearing in mind, it wasn't late. Just speechless. Tears after in the dressing room. And it, sheer frustration, because it was only on our part and it was our doing as players. And we know we should have got it done. We were a better team. Credit to Lithuania. Their goalie stood on his head, and that was the difference maker for them. But my God, you know, if I hadn't won the gold personally in 2017, I'd look back on those 3 years consecutively like, not going to get a better opportunity. So, yeah, it was, I remember Japan coming out as well in the first 5 minutes, just flying. And thinking in my head, oh God, please no. I was like, Jesus, no, please don't have another three-peat, if you like, of us not winning. And I felt from that minute, you know, for 55 minutes onwards, or I should say 55 minutes total, if you like, 5 minutes onwards for the rest of the game, we were in control. I don't think they controlled any part after that. So once it got, you know, to the later stages and we're up by a few, it we didn't relax, but at the same time we felt comfortable, because Pete is a very good X's and O's coach, and he does his homework very well, and I think that he had a game plan, and obviously we protected that well with the systems he put in place.
Yeah, it must have been fantastic finishing on such a high and getting the gold. But just a quick fire question for you, Russ. Playoffs, 04-05 or 14-15? Which one was more special and why?
Oh, that honestly, you put me on the spot. That is a tough, that is such a tough answer. But, oh, Jesus. I honestly, and I don't want to take a cop out here, because if say for example we hadn't won the treble in 04-05, I'd pick 2015, because of the treble. It makes it special, because as I said, that's not something hardly anybody comes by. I go back to saying some players aren't even fortunate enough to win trophies. You look at, for example, Omara in 2015. Omara had never won a championship of any kind, you know, so for him winning in 2015, one trophy. And I think to myself, how spoiled have I been with Coventry or with any parts of my career? So, but the thing that made 15 special for certainly me personally was, I go back to that experience of unsuccess, which we'd had for a period of time. And then you add on to that how unsuccessful we were that season. We were underdogs. You add on to that how much the group was just an unreal group. We loved every guy loved everybody. Everybody bought in. We were the underdogs, lowest seed to win. I knew personally it was coming towards the later part of my career. Wasn't probably going to have an opportunity like that again, possibly. It made it that much sweeter to win, because it probably wasn't going to happen again. And then for me, it didn't. So, yeah. The older you get, the more you appreciate those times. So 2015 for me was, yeah, just unreal. But I'll never take away from the fact of winning a treble at the same time. Yeah, I don't know if that's a fair answer. I know you're looking for a definitive one, but
no, it's fine. I mean, I understand. I mean, obviously, 2014-15 season, we were, like I say, we were in such a slump, obviously changing coaches and then finishing on a high, winning the playoffs. So, yeah, I understand where you're coming from.
I think you just kind of, you know, put it in a good perspective too. Like, for me personally, for me being at the club so long, getting friendly with a lot of fans, and seeing the heartache on their side. And obviously we'd been in finals that we lost. We hadn't had much success in other seasons. And to see the joy on our fans. And I go back to, like, you know, Coventry is a city. It's obviously home to me. For me, it became more emotional because of the time invested for me personally. So I had that emotional investment that, you know, when I see that unsuccess look on people's face and that heartache on people's face that I'd come to know, come to be friends with, it hurts you even more. And therefore, when you're able to deliver that trophy again of something that we'd all experienced, from fans, players, you name it, it was a special moment, I think, for everybody, because it brings back that feeling that we hadn't had for a long time.
Definitely. And I believe we were the only team to finish out of the top three to actually win the playoffs. And that still stands to this day, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, we were sixth in the league at that time. And that's why I said, I remember nobody wanted to play us. Nobody in the first round wanted to get us. And it was, if I remember, it came down to the last couple of weekends where there was a lot of movement. And I remember us having a conversation as a group that, you know, we were the best team that season, or we were definitely top two from about, was it December onwards or something like that, or early January onwards. Nobody wanted us, and I could understand why. We were confident, we were going, we had our game sussed. So yeah, we were confident going in that, but yeah, we're the lowest seed to win the playoffs at the time, and nobody's won it as low as sixth.
So you retired from the game after winning gold with GB in Belfast, but then you take a year away, then you end up in Basingstoke, then a season with Milton Keynes Lightning. What made you come back to the sport? And a second part of this question, coming back, was the standard too easy for you or too hard, or was it just enough to get what you wanted out of the game?
So my intention for, I can tell you this, my intention for retiring was never to come back. Did I have it in my mind before I retired when the EPL existed? It was a possibility in my mind that I thought, do I look at my career outside of hockey and I start engaging into that? And then I'll you know, play the EPL. And of course that was a thought of mine, but then the EPL ended up folding. So when I retired, I got my teeth fixed, because I obviously lost my front two and had issues with those. So I got my teeth fixed. And then I blame Ash for this. If ever Ashley Tate listens to this, I blame you. And he knows I blame him. So he was in Coventry at the time. Me and him went for breakfast just to catch up. And during breakfast, he was like, oh, I've been approached about the Basingstoke job. And so we had a good chat about it. And nothing was said, I guess, from a playing perspective. And then that year, obviously, there was a bit of an issue with Basingstoke with the previous coach, Doug Shepherd, and him exiting late. Ash getting the job close to the season, he had very little time to put his team together, and he texted me 2 weeks after we went for breakfast, and this, bearing in mind, this is probably August now, he's like, would you consider playing? And I said, oh Jesus, I said, Ash, why are you doing this to me? So anyway, I took about a week or so to think it over, and yeah, I just said to Ash, I said, you know, obviously it was Basingstoke, a fair way away. And I said, they trained a couple of nights a week. I was only able to commit to one because of obviously having a child and work. And it just ended up working out. Really unreal group of guys. Yeah, the standard was different. Don't get me wrong. There's some unbelievable. You know, that year was different to, for example, Milton Keynes, because it was divided between North and South. So there were some teams that were actually really poor. If I want to be honest, it wasn't fun playing in those games at all. But at the same time, you play the teams that were good. And even some of the teams that were half decent, they had some players that were very skilled, very, very skilled. The difference for me is the awareness on the ice. Like, some players would have unreal skill, but they wouldn't have a clue without the puck where they might, they're supposed to be. So during games, there were times where you wouldn't normally have time on the puck and you would, or vice versa. You know, you think you'd have a ton of time and you wouldn't, someone's standing right next to you. So it was that kind of difference, if you like. So there, yeah, there was a bit of a jump, but at the same time, there are some things that are, like I said, there's players in that league that have played at the highest level in this country. And for one reason or another, for them, it might be work, family reasons that they've taken a step down. So the standard is good. Certainly, obviously, when I went to Milton Keynes, because the league had become one, it was way more balanced. And again, I'll go back to some of the young talent is unbelievable. If I don't see some of those players in the Elite League soon, I'd be surprised. And even some of the older players, again, for them, it's a reason of work or personal reason that they don't want to make the jump up. So yeah, I think it's just more that, yeah, the pace of the game is a little less, but at the same time, I think sometimes it's players reading the game, which makes a big difference. And that's what you'll see at different levels in any sport. Some players that are unbelievably talented, but they don't necessarily have the what you need upstairs, if you like, to be in the right place, right time, read the game, read things before they happen. Because they're, you know, like, let's be honest, like, yeah, okay, I've had a great career in the Elite League, played many world championships, and there are players in the league, in the NIHL, that are more talented than I am. But are they able to play in the Elite League because they have everything as a package that takes what it takes? Maybe, maybe not. But some of them don't. But they might be more talented than me, might stick handle the puck better than me. But like I say, there's more to it than just having, as you guys know, take football or any sport alike. It's there's a lot of components that come to a game that make people as successful as they are at top level, if that makes sense.
No, yeah, 100% makes sense, Russ. It's, you can have all the talent in the world, but if you don't have the commitment and the determination to use it wisely, you'll never get anywhere with it. And,
sure.
You know, I said this to Ash earlier today about something else, I think it was. Epitome of that, in my opinion, is Jordan Henderson. Probably not the most skillful player or talented player out there, but the drive that he's got is unbelievable.
100%.
Yeah, it's, I totally get what you're saying. So we're kind of coming to the end for you now, Russ. We've got all the kind of, we've covered your career up to date. The only thing that we do ask is, we've asked every player that's joined us, who would be your top six if you had to pick a team? So you're the head coach. Who's your netminder? Who's your two defenders? And who's your three forwards in that team?
Wow, is that ever tough? And I'm sure that, yeah, everybody else says the same thing. Is that ever tough? Because I obviously, again, have been fortunate enough to play alongside some unbelievable players. Goalie-wise... I'd probably have to pick, and this is tough because I've played with some goalies who, it pains me to maybe not pick them, but I have to say Lamer, I think, is my number one goalie in his time, in his prime. Because if you look at the success he's had with other teams, even, I think I'd have to pick Lamer as a goalie, but you know, that's not putting down some of the goalies I've been lucky enough to play with. You know, look at Stewie in his prime. Great guy. I love Stewie. Unorthodox goalie, but so good at what he does. Right, D-man. I think you know one of mine.
Might do.
I'm asking you to throw it out there. You'll know one of my picks.
I'm going to go with... We've had him on recently, Neil Martin.
Yep. Marty would be one of mine. Just skates well. great human being. Love him to bits. And I think, you know, you'd struggle to find a better D-man in the era that he played with us, definitely. Next to him, in his prime, I'd have to pick Weaves, for sure. Yeah. In Weaves' prime, again, I know that he's slowed down in his old tender age, but when Weaves is in his prime, like, playing him as a teammate, he is unbelievably clever. He's so good with the puck. He's clever. I mean, you look at some of the seasons he's had as a D-man, he gets over 70 points, and that's him in his prime. As I say, yeah, he slowed down towards the end, but there's absolutely no doubt in my mind I'd take Waves as my second in his prime. Have I played with some other D-men that it pains me not to pick them? Yes, because, again, there's some D-men I played with who I think I'd love to pick too, but Neil Martin and Weaves in their prime would be a good pairing. For toughness, if you could pick a backup to those two, you'd take Bielak. Because, again, another unbelievable guy, you know, a guy who came in from the Toronto Maple Leafs that gets paid $1 million a year. And just the person he was, again, willing to do anything for his teammates. But yeah, I'd have to say Weaves and Marty. Forwards. Colds.
Yeah.
If I'm taking Colds, I got to take AC/DC, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And again, some unbelievable players have played with, but for the length of time they were here and what they were able to do together, and as a duo, I'm not sure there was a better duo in the league. Yeah. And then the other winger. It's a tough one.
I think that's a very interesting one because obviously you had the AC/DC, but then you've played with some decent wingers and you played for the decent wingers in Cardiff as well. So we've got to put you on the spot, Iris. We need the winger to.
Well, I guess I'm going. Yeah, I was thinking Coventry as obviously. Yeah, I was thinking more Coventry. But are you saying Coventry or anywhere?
Anywhere you've played with them, but
Jesus,
I think you could put this one to playing with both Cov and Cardiff if you want to pick the one we think of.
Now you're making it tough. Okay. I'm thinking in my mind, a few come to mind. Again, in his prime, to go with those two that would complement them well. One of the players I'm thinking is Ash, mm-hmm. As a winger. See, Smitty in Cardiff, obviously, unbelievable player, but he played middle. So I'm not replacing DC, but he was obviously good. But winger wise, oh Jesus, I'll tell you who I would take on my team any day, and I know everyone else hated him. And if I was coach, for example, someone that I'd pick to go with those two in particular, if I had to put that line together, would possibly be Vother.
Wow.
And I say that because those two with someone like him that looks after them. The other thing I'll say to you, again, I go back, we talked about Harvey and people of that ilk. Vother, very tough, but when he can play hockey, like, he is really good, and he was really good.
Yeah, he was.
And let me tell you now, as a teammate, you won't meet a better guy either. Hated playing against him, couldn't stand him, despised him. But as a teammate, I would take him on my team any day of the week.
Yeah.
Because of what he's like off the ice, but also on it, I'd take him any day of the week. And if I was going to complement that line to be an effective line, I'm going to pick Vother then.
That's a good pick. I suppose when you think about it, when you look at Calder Carlson and the Grand Slam year, they had Andre, who was kind of like that, but not probably points-wise like Vother is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see the...
That's what I mean, that balance, right? Like, okay, I could go and pick someone who just dominates point-wise, but if you were a coach and you wanted someone to... Not that they need looking after, but to look after those two, to give them a bit more room on the ice, and someone that can play with them and has the skill to, I'd pick someone like Vother every day of the week.
100%. I can see the thought process.
Yeah.
Ashley's a bit disappointed though, because he decided to try and guess about mid-recording what your top six would be. He's got four of them. He went with Jody, Neil, Calder, and Carlson. I think he was trying to be too friendly, and he went with the Richardson brothers on D and the other wing. So
To be honest, I guess at that time I only came to Cardiff when I was on the forwards, because I thought you guys were asking for Coventry. In Cardiff, for example, Phil Ozier, I thought, was a good goalie. So he'd be up there with one of my favorite goalies. But at the time, I wasn't thinking Cardiff. So, but then when you guys threw out Cardiff, I mean, that made it harder for me too. So I'm glad I didn't know about Cardiff until the forwards.
the only other thing that I've really got to kind of touch upon for yourself then, Russ, is it's something Kevin Noble gave us when he recorded with us, because obviously before we started the recording, we alluded to, we were meant to have you on just before Christmas, and then Christmas, New Year gets in the way, so obviously everything gets made. Noble gave us a question, and he wants you to tap into your brain here. If you had to review the league using what you know now from your obviously education, what would you change about the league?
Oh, Jesus. Nobes would put that on me. And for the record, I get on well with Nobes. I speak to him still. Me and him get on really well, and we always did at Coventry. So I'm going to give him shit for putting that question across to me. But if you want my honest opinion, as much as you want the standard of the league to be what it's at, I would look to drop an import or two for starters. Maybe the first year you drop one, see how it goes. And as I say, like, for me, you got to think about it on the consumer perspective, which is kind of, that's my area of research, is consumer behavior. So that's the reason that, for example, I might propose that first. And the reason I say that is, firstly, from a consumer perspective, you want the standard high because you want that entertainment value, the good on ice product. Secondly, there's a lot of fans that buy into home talent to the British players because they associate themselves with them.
Yeah.
And adding on to that is the national team. For the national team to be successful, which has a ripple effect on the sport as a whole in the UK, you trial that, you drop an import and see how it goes. Now, the reason the league won't is a business model for them. Our British players are going to demand more money, but at the same time, teams aren't necessarily going to, you know, there's a lot of British players in the elite league that are better than a lot of the imports that come in, let's be honest. So, or as good. So I get it from the business model side, but at the same time, you got to think about the longevity of sport, the impact that it has on the fans, the consumers. So that would be one thing I'd look to address. You drop it by one, you see how that goes. And then obviously you assess it at the end of the season and you look to make a decision from there. Do we maintain it at what it's at for one more, then see where we're at? Do we then drop it one more after that? Obviously things move forward. There needs to be a lot better structure, if you like, from an ownership, not an ownership's the wrong word, governance, because it's too fragmented.
Yeah,
it's too fragmented. Now, you have to appreciate, and I get this, that it's ice hockey in the UK is more of a franchise model like you see in the US. So the businesses have to be businesses and they have to be successful. And that's understood, and I get that. But at the same time, you look at the development of kids and coming through the ranks, like, it's hard. Yeah, okay, they adopted the under 23 rule, but what really success did that have? There are some teams that favor it than others because of the position they're in financially than other ones. So is it a best fit for all? No, it's not. I'm not knocking it, but is it a best fit for all? Not necessarily so. You can implement a wage cap because it costs money to police that, and it's just impossible to police with the league and the money or resources they'd have to be able to commit to that. So going on the points that I said would be first and foremost, but the governance is a big issue.
Yeah.
So that's something I'd address. Do you start trying to link in with the universities a little more? Yes, but again, you look at the feeders to the university, it's not going to be the same as what you'd expect in the US, for example, where you have such good hockey players coming from lower junior levels to feed into university. Mm. And I go back to what I was saying to you guys about the junior system in this country. Where do the best players go? They go abroad. They go to Sweden. They go to Canada. They don't stick around because there comes a point where they just unfortunately don't learn enough because the standard's not the same. And they're on the ice once a week.
Yeah.
And it's not good enough. Unfortunately, resources is a problem. And when I say resources, I mean money. I mean facilities. And all those things cost a lot. And it's not going to be a click the finger and you're going to be able to fix the problem. So there is a bunch of barriers that are in place for this sport, cost being, you know, to parents certainly being one of them, but it, you know, generally it's got to start at a younger level and build up. But how you overcome that with a lack of resources is a lot easier said than done. Does that make sense? Because to me, the only thing that they can do or can be done at this point in time to overcome the resources and the barriers of the facilities is probably your synthetic ice facilities to complement. It's the only way I can see. But from an elite league perspective, looking at that, you know, I've kind of given my point forward on that. Yes, it's a closed league. It has started to gain success, but at the same time, you don't want to see the same thing that happened in the Super League.
Yeah.
So, and that's what worries me a little bit, you know. But at the same time, some of the same ownerships or some of the same people are involved, and you'd like to think that they knew what went wrong before and that they don't want to see the same thing happen again. So,
hopefully, yeah, you definitely hope so. So that's pretty much all I've got then, Russ. I'll ask the others now what they've got. So, Ross, we got any more from you?
No, nothing from me, thanks.
No worries. Ash, any more from yourself?
Nothing more from me, thank you.
No worries. And Scott, I know you were disappointed with the VOF nomination there, but have you got any more for yourself?
I saw the shake of your head, Scott.
It's not that. It's a player you love to hate. He's a player you want on your team.
I get that.
He was so, so successful. And he come into the Sky. He's one of the big players that came into the Sky Dome and didn't struggle. I've seen players around the league. I don't want to name any players, but certain players would struggle with our ice. He didn't care. He would just come in. And at a time where Cardiff and the Blaze rivalry was at a high and Devils didn't get so many results, he tried to change that ethos. And then when we went to Cardiff, he would make that difference. So it's just a rivalry thing. So it was just more hurt.
Sorry about that, Scott.
No problem. That's fine. Now, just wanted to touch upon the synthetic ice thing. Is that a feasible thing for the UK, do you think?
I think certainly for in some capacity, especially for young kids, being able to have that little bit extra, you know, 1 hour a week is just not enough. It just really isn't. For many reasons. Firstly, you're going to see kids that they get 1 hour a week. They, much as they enjoy the sport, if they're playing another sport and they're progressing quicker, which will happen in cricket, rugby, football, because they're playing way more, then their skills become more developed than it might be in hockey. Naturally, they might sway and be like, you know what, I'm gonna play this sport because they're becoming better at it. So there's that. Second thing is, 1 hour a week from just a pure ability standpoint, with a synthetic ice, it's obviously a lot different with cost. The upkeep's a lot different, so it's more affordability for parents than it would be to have, you know, an hour of ice costs, depending on where you are in the country, you know, between, you know, let's just start argument's sake, let's say £250 an hour. What sport do you rent a hall? Do you rent a space for £250 an hour? It's insanity, right? But at the same time, it costs a lot for arenas because they're keeping the ice cold. So, you know, if you had those kids doing 1 hour a week and then they were able to do 1 or 2 hours on top of that, working on stick skills, working on other skills, it's going to help them develop a lot quicker and improve in their ability. So Yeah, I'm not saying it's a long-term solution, but certainly it's going to help, I think. So, yes, we'd love to see more ice rinks, but not sure that's going to happen anytime soon. That's unfortunate, really. But
No, I suppose the added bonus of synthetic ice, if it's what I'm thinking of, the stuff that I've seen advertised, that it's portable as well. So even if they were to, say, go away during the summer with the family to, you know, I don't know, Weymouth or wherever they end up going on a,
yeah.
I don't know why Weymouth, but you know what I mean? You can take it with them and they can
keep
in touch with doing some sort of ball hockey on the pads and what have you. So yeah. That's the added bonus for that as well, I suppose. So that's pretty much it then, Russ. We've taken up a lot more time than we originally anticipated.
I can talk. Sorry about that. I can talk.
No, that's fine. I know when we were messaging earlier, we said, 30, 40 minutes. It shouldn't take too long for you.
Yeah, when you said that, I was like, I don't know. Not with me. So my apologies. But I know I really appreciate you guys having me. And thanks very much for your time. Yeah, it was good to relive those memories. A lot of nostalgia coming about from it. And positive thoughts, so that's nice from my end.
No, thank you for joining us, Russ. And just before obviously everybody does shoot off, just a reminder, obviously we are in the month of March when this episode airs, so we are obviously pushing our charity for Cancer Research UK, where we are aiming to try and achieve 1,000 miles between us and aiming to achieve that goal of £1,000 to be raised. So a Just Giving link will be at the bottom of the tweet. Go check it out and donate whatever you can. It's much appreciated. So again, Russ, thank you for joining us. We appreciate the time you've taken this evening. And that's it for this week's episode of the Third Period Podcast. We hope to see you all soon in an ice rink. Thanks again for listening to the Third Period Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. Remember to check out Willie's Ice Hockey Emporium for all your ice hockey needs.